There are, I suppose, few places even on the east coast of England more lonely and remote than the village of Little Sundersley and the country that surrounds it. Far from any railway, and some miles distant from any considerable town, it remains an outpost of civilization, in which primitive manners and customs and old-world tradition linger on into an age that has elsewhere forgotten them. In the summer, it is true, a small contingent of visitors, adventurous in spirit, though mostly of sedate and solitary habits, make their appearance to swell its meagre population and impart to the wide stretches of smooth sand that fringe its shores a fleeting air of life and sober gaiety. But in late September, the season of the year in which I made its acquaintance, its pasture lands lie desolate, the rugged paths along the cliffs are seldom trodden by human foot, and the sands are a desert waste on which, for days together, no footprint appears save that left by some passing seabird. I had been assured by my medical agent, Mr. Turcival, that I should find the practice of which I was now taking charge, an exceedingly soft billet and suitable for a studious man. And certainly he had not misled me, for the patients were, in fact, so few that I was quite concerned for my principal and rather dull for want of work. Hence, when my friend John Thorndyke, the well-known medico-legal expert, proposed to come down and stay with me for a weekend and perhaps a few days beyond, I hailed the proposal with delight and welcomed him with open arms. "You certainly don't seem to be overworked, Jervis," he remarked, as we turned out of the gate after tea on the day of his arrival for a stroll on the shore. "Is this a new practice or an old one in a state of senile decay?" "Why, the fact is," I answered, "there is virtually no practice. Cooper, my principal, has been here about 6 years, and as he has private means, he has never made any serious effort to build one up. And the other man, Dr. Burrows, being uncommonly keen, and the people very conservative, Cooper has never really got his foot in. However, it doesn't seem to trouble him." "Well, if he is satisfied, I suppose you are," said Thorndyke, with a smile. "You are getting a seaside holiday, and being paid for it. But I didn't know you were as near to the sea as this." We were entering, as he spoke, an artificial gapway cut through the low cliff, forming a steep cart track down the shore. It was locally known as Sundersley Gap, and was used principally, when used at all, by the farmers' carts which came down to gather seaweed after a gale. "What a magnificent stretch of sand," continued Thorndyke, as we reached the bottom and stood looking out seaward across the deserted beach. "There is something very majestic and solemn in a great expanse of sandy shore when the tide is out, and I know of nothing which is capable of conveying the impression of solitude so completely. The smooth, unbroken surface not only displays itself untenanted for the moment, but it offers convincing testimony that it has lain thus undisturbed through a considerable lapse of time. Here, for instance, we have clear evidence that for several days only two pairs of feet besides our own have trodden this gap." "How do you arrive at the several days?" I asked. "In the simplest manner possible," he replied. "The moon is now in the third quarter, and the tides are consequently neap tides. You can see quite plainly the two lines of seaweed and jetsam which indicate the high water marks of the spring tides and the neap tides respectively. The strip of comparatively dry sand between them, over which the water has not risen for several days, is, as you see, marked by only two sets of footprints, and those footprints will not be completely obliterated by the sea until the next spring tide, nearly a week from today." "Yes, I see now, and the thing appears obvious enough when one has heard the explanation. But it is really rather odd that no one should have passed through this gap for days, and then that four persons should have come here within a quick short interval of one another." "What makes you think they have done so?" Thorndyke asked. "Well," I replied, "both of these sets of footprints appear to be quite fresh and to have been made about the same time." "Not at the same time, Jervis," rejoined Thorndyke. "There is certainly an interval of several hours between them, though precisely how many hours we cannot judge, since there has been so little wind lately to disturb them. But the fisherman unquestionably passed here not more than 3 hours ago, and I should say probably within an hour, whereas the other man, who seems to have come up from a boat to fetch something of considerable weight, returned through the gap certainly not less, and probably more, than 4 hours ago.